As horrible as the COVID-19 crisis is, it has brought out the best in the American people. The selflessness of frontline nurses and doctors, for example. Yet, it has also amplified one of the worst character flaws in our society, namely the me-first greed of corporate chieftains. Just last August, we were told that a new, more democratic corporate ethic was emerging. The CEOs of 181 big-name giants signed a public pledge that henceforth they would run their corporations not solely to maximize shareholder profits, but also to benefit workers, communities, and other economic stakeholders. Then, only 5 months later, boom, the pandemic hit. Profits dropped and the new magnanimous spirit of togetherness vanished from these corporate boardrooms. Immediately, masses of their workers were being punted out the door. Health benefits were coldly terminated just when needed most, and the pledge to serve the common good went into the shredder. Well, retorted such pledge signers as Arne Sorensen, CEO of the Marriott Hotel Empire, revenues are drying up, so all promises are negated. In a March video message dispatching most of Marriott's employees, Sorensen cluelessly added this insult to their injury: I wish you good health and a sense of optimism. A couple of weeks later, workers learned that while Marriott was cutting off their paychecks, it had doled out $160 million in dividends to its rich shareholders, a group that includes Sorensen. This is Jim Hightower saying, the CEO did say he'll forego some of his million-dollar salary this year, but that's disingenuous, since he also gets some $11 million a year in incentive pay and other compensation. And while workers are now consigned to the unemployment line, Sorensen is in line for a 7% pay hike next year and a multimillion-dollar cash bonus.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
I got to tell you, I still, I cannot. I know there was so much to get to today. There's so much. The guy asking Trump if he regretted, being such a liar. That's funny and on my mind. But, I'll tell you, I just can't get past.
We're not going to let Joe Biden and Kamala Harris cut America's meat.
We're not going to let you cut our meat. It's not happening, man. We're not going to let Kamala Harris cut my meat. That's mama's job. I'm sorry. I just can't get past that. I'm here to share some thoughts on Mike Pence's meat. I've asked our good friend Sarah Burris, reporter over at Raw Story, to share some thoughts. Sarah, thanks for taking time for us.
That's a metaphor I never thought about.
So Mike, we're not going to let Kamala Harris cut our meat.
Here's the thing. The Beatles once said, all you need is love. But I feel like barbecue gets pretty close.
I'm with you. Oh, I got to tell you, I really cannot wait for Kamala Harris to proverbially shove an impossible burger down his throat.
Oh, it's going to be the best debate ever. I think it's probably going to be more people are going to tune into that than the Biden debate, because I think Biden's going to be like very, reserved and presidential and yada yada. He'll throw some malarkeys here and there. But Harris is going to take Pence and put him in a place I think he secretly has always wanted to be.
I'm not going there. Not getting down into the cutting of the meat.
You're the one who mentioned the Pence meat.
And here's the thing. While we're talking about Pence's meat, we find out today that Michael Cohen knows where the P tapes are, or where P tapes may be, and he might leak them.
Yeah, Michael Cohen knows where all the bodies are buried. And I think, as somebody who has been banned by Michael Cohen on Twitter, I feel like we should all come together around the idea that even if it means that Michael Cohen is divulging something that a lawyer should not divulge, it's in the interest of the country, right? feel like, you know, he's doing the right thing here. Everybody should. I mean, I don't know how many minds it's going to change, because I feel like there's like 4% of people who are undecided right now. Like, there's somebody out there who's like, God, you know, I don't know enough about Donald Trump. I need to learn. I need to Google some positions on it. Like, no, nobody feels like that. And I doubt any of those people, if they are undecided, they're probably not that interested in getting up and risking the corona to go to the polls. So, you know, I think it's going to be a really great entertainment for the rest of us. I'm not sure it's going to move the needle.
No. But, and it's going to make him some money, and good for him. You know, I'm glad to see that he used his time in prison well.
Yeah, totally.
I just want to know, and I said this when I found out he was writing a book, I just wanted to know, did he write it on toilet paper? Especially during a time when toilet paper was at a premium, and who funded the toilet paper that was at a premium during the time he wrote the book?
Speaking of toilet paper, I really want to know why Trump needs to flush the toilet 10 times. I mean, I know this kind of keeps coming back, especially with the new showerhead regulations, but I think America needs to know, like, what is going on with you intestinally that you have to flush the toilet 10 times? Really?
Oh, that's funny. And thanks for bringing that up. And thanks for reminding me that it's not bad enough I had to think about Mike Pence's meat. Now I got to think about Donald Trump's other end.
You know, that's what I'm here for.
Thanks for that. But let's get to the other thing. Today, hero. You know, Twitters have this SV date guy as a big hero. He asked the question I think most of us at one time or another have thought of. Do you regret lying to us? Do you regret being dishonest? And I can answer it for him. No, but I found it interesting that nobody backed the guy up.
Yeah, I was really surprised by that too. And that was one of the things that I've always been really bothered by in the press room, is it just seems like there's so much opportunity for all of these reporters to kind of come back at the president and say, actually, no, I want to know the answers to what, you know, Caitlin Collins just asked you, or I want to know, you know, the rest of that answer that that you're avoiding telling us about, you know, whatever. I'm surprised. I think that there are a lot of people in the press room that are probably conservative plants that are there to ask him things like, what's your favorite color and why are you so awesome? But the reality is,
you're thinking about One American News. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. She's the one who likes to ask, what's your favorite color? And it's always like, you can tell how insecure he is that day based on who he calls. Like, if he's feeling really confident in himself, he'll call on, you know, somebody that he thinks is the fake news. But if he's having like a really bad day and down on himself, he's always going to call on OAN first. So, I'm proud of the guy for being brave enough to ask it. I'm really disappointed in the rest of the press corps for not backing him up.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where, you know, even if you don't agree, you go, hey, you know, you got to answer the guy's question, because maybe someday I'm going to ask a question that I'm going to want an answer to, and you should have to answer that. And doesn't this come back to that, you know, Trump has done, and I think masterfully done, a great job of convincing a lot of people that it's all fake news and they're all beneath me, and the media is actually the enemy in all of this. Instead of, you know, just trying to ferret out the truth and trying to, you know, to get to the bottom of things.
And I think the reality is that the media is not the enemy of Trump. It's the truth that's the enemy of Trump. And the media is just the delivery purpose for that.
Yeah, Trump and the truth, kind of far away as Pence and his meat. So there you go. I had to get one more meat thing in there. I'm sorry. I wanted to get your thoughts on the VP pick, the nasty woman. Do you see a kind of a pattern with Trump and all of these nasty women? I mean, you know, obviously Hillary was a nasty woman, and I think Nancy Pelosi, he's called a nasty woman. There have been a bunch of them. And now, you know, Kamala Harris is a nasty woman. She's a phony nasty woman.
I'm going to have to whip out my T-shirt, because I have a nasty woman T-shirt that I feel like I'm going to be able to reuse this year. But the reality is, Trump has serious problems with women. Maybe it's because he has mommy issues. Maybe it's because he's had 75 wives and nobody really loves him. I don't really know. Maybe it's because he has to pay for sex. I got nothing. But he seriously has issues with women, and the dude tweeting stuff about suburban housewives, you know, like to be fair, I'm sure people who still consider themselves housewives are probably voting for Donald Trump. But for the rest of the world that's, you know, a stay-at-home mom or a working mom or, you know, a working woman or whatever, those are not women who want to hear about being Trump's housewife or being called a nasty woman. And I think a lot of people, you know, a lot of women who experience men like Trump in their lives, I think they secretly probably, you know, whether their husbands and all of their friends or their church want them to vote some way, I think they're probably going to, you know, go into that voting booth and cast a ballot secretly for somebody else.
Yeah, I sure hope so. I sure hope so, because we're in this just weird moment where, you know, you've got Trump running around saying, you know, no one could ever imagine how wonderful we've done with the virus on a day where we're almost at 170,000 people dead over this alternative reality kind of stuff. And then today to have him attacking Joe Biden for pointing out his obvious flaws seemed kind of weird that, you know, oh, please stop beating up on me.
The best part about that was that Donald Trump had the gall to say that that Biden is discounting the science. This is a man who told people to inject disinfectant and stick a UV light up their ass. Right? Like, this is not a science man. He has never believed in science. He has pushed people out of the EPA. He's tried to get rid of all kinds of government scientists. He requires that they run all of their reports through a right-wing shill to monitor them. This is not the friend of science here. And so this, like, projection on this idea that somehow Biden doesn't trust the science of this, and then he turns around and attacks the mask mandate. Like, where do you think Biden is getting this? Is he just making it up? Is he just, like, you know, picking a card out of a 52-card deck that says, ooh, wear a mask? No, he's listening to the damn scientists. So I'm just, I'm so frustrated. And it's like every single time he projects these things, it's really just that his own insecurities that he's just trying to project onto Biden. And it's sad. It's pathetic. And he needs to grow the hell up.
Yeah, that's not going to happen. And he's never going to change. He's only going to get worse. Just kind of throwing that out there as a matter of, you know, it is what it is. So
it is, and I think it's going to get worse and worse the closer we get to election day, because he's going to get more desperate, and we're all just going to be, like, in hell.
Yeah, no, you're right. And as I've said, you know, from the day after election day until January 20th, 2021, that's going to be the most dangerous time in our country's history. Yeah. Because then it's like, well, they're going to just burn the house down to create a massive mess, I think, for Biden to clean up. But here's the weird thing. I mean, I don't know if you saw his comments today about, you know, we're not going to allow the Democrats to pass anything to get money to the Postal Service, because we're not going to let them do the mail-in voting stuff. You know, that's just basically saying we're going to force the post office to fail. We're going to let them go to, you know, straight to pot, just so that maybe there's a chance that the people who would be voting for me, the older Americans, don't get the vote. It's kind of crazy.
It's going to end up going really badly for him. And I think the Republicans as well. I think the Senate is saying, all right, we're not going to meet back. I think they adjourned until September 8th.
Yep.
Which is just absurd, but they're on, like, a 24-hour watch in case something happens. But realistically, like, nothing that the Republicans do, like, nothing that the White House and the Congress agree on is going to, you know, it's going to have the USPS funding in it. And I think, I mean, honest to God, it's going to end up being such a huge problem, not just because of the ballot thing, but, like, the whole mail thing. I don't know if you saw the ad from Vote Vets that they put on today about how veterans aren't getting their prescriptions.
Right.
Like, the VA mails prescriptions to veterans, and they're not getting this stuff because Donald Trump is playing politics with the post office. And, I mean, how many people is it going to take for that. I mean, Nikki Haley already has come out and complained about the slowness of the post office because, you know, what's his name? Lovejoy, the postmaster general, is slowing things down and trying to cause problems. It's frustrating and people are going to get hurt. Like, this is the same thing we talk about. It seems like every other week there's something where it's like people are going to get hurt because of this, because yeah. Donald Trump is being a child.
But what we're seeing with the post office is, again, another one of those moments where you have people who say, we don't believe in government. We don't believe in government institution. We don't believe that they should be doing anything. And then they set out to do everything they can possibly do to prove their first position by doing all of the things that they've done. In fact, I had someone send me pictures that I guess were on Twitter of, you know, the post office or a contractor of the post office picking up the corner mailboxes so people can't drop their ballots in the corner mailbox anymore, that they're going to have to go to the post office. And you go, well, that's what big deal is that? Well, it's not a big thing, but it's another one of those, you know, death of 1,000 paper cuts. It's another one of those, mm-hmm. The magnitude of, you know, one, this on top of that, on top of that, on top of that, creates an environment where it's going to harm the Postal Service.
I think the biggest campaign that Biden is going to have to do from now until Election Day is trying to convince people that Trump wants to take your vote away from you. And this is your right. And it doesn't matter if you're voting for him or voting for Donald Trump or voting for, you know, whatever third party they can come up with. If Kanye West can get on the ballot, everybody deserves the right to vote. And Trump is trying to take it away from people. And I just keep hoping that people will get enraged enough that that means that they will work that much harder, you know, to get the ballot in the mail. I'm a little bit nervous about getting my ballot notarized because the lobby of my bank isn't open, and that's where I go to get things notarized. And so I'm going to have to figure out a place to get stuff notarized and get my ballot in the mail. So, I mean, it's just a lot of things like that where, we're all going to have to work really hard. We're going to have to, you know, promise ourselves that this is the number one priority, is our right to vote and our right to cast that ballot and do whatever it takes to get it in the mail.
And the fact that they put those kind of mandates that you have to have your ballot notarized, mm-hmm. is another one of those roadblocks. And it's not a minor one. I mean, this is, you've mm-hmm. got to actually, you know, physically go to a place, and in some cases you have to pay for it. I don't know if your bank charges for it, but in some places you have to pay for this if you don't have a bank that notarizes. You know, this is another one of those obstacles where people go, screw it, I can't do it.
So if somebody ever tells you that they're going to charge you to notarize a ballot, fight back against that and say, that's a poll tax and that's illegal. You can't ask me to pay for this. Technically it is. It just hasn't been challenged in court before. I would argue that it's also a poll tax that somebody has to put a stamp on the damn ballot. But again, like, these are things that people don't know about. And I had UPS try and tell me that once whenever I went in to have my ballot notarized in the UPS store before I started going to my bank. And they tried to tell me that. And I was like, no, you can't. That's illegal. And it's a kid behind a counter who doesn't know any better. You know, if you just challenge it and say, no, this poll tax, that's illegal, then you're good. Chances are nobody's going to challenge that.
Yeah, and chances are most people don't know that you can challenge it. So they're either going to pay it and be really ticked off about it, I'm never voting by mail again,
right,
or they're just going to walk out and go, screw it, it's not that important.
Yeah, I hope that it's the former.
Yeah, you brought up Kanye West. You know, again, he's an interesting character. I mean, the sad reality is at this point, the poster child for the need for national mental health care. But he's actually going to be on a ballot. He's going to be on one or two of the state's ballots, right?
I don't know which ones he's going to end up on.
Oklahoma!
We're not going to win Oklahoma. I'm not worried about Oklahoma. If Kanye West encourages people in Oklahoma to vote for him, then that means that they're not going to vote straight ticket. And Oklahoma is a straight ticket state. So if somebody jumps off the Republican ticket, the Republican straight party ticket, to vote for Kanye West, that means they might very well cast the ballot for the congresswoman in the 5th district that is the most endangered Democrat in Congress. And The other thing is, if they try and vote straight ticket and they check off Kanye West as the presidential, their ballot's going to be completely voided and it won't count.
Interesting. So you think, from your perspective, having Kanye on the ballot isn't a bad thing?
In Oklahoma, it's not. In Wisconsin, it would be. And that's why there are so many different legal battles right now. One of them is that the signatures that the Trump lawyer turned in, I think they got filed at something like 49 seconds after 5 p.m. And the law states 5 p.m. on the dot is the deadline. And then there's a whole legal challenge about, I think Kanye West's lawyers tried to say that Democrats had to prove that Mickey Mouse was not a real voter. There are a lot of legal challenges happening in Wisconsin. That's going to be an important one. I think maybe in Colorado, I don't know for sure. I don't know if that's a straight ticket state either, but, Colorado's kind of a lock for Joe Biden. That state has gone very blue.
Yeah. And maybe even a Senate pickup seat.
Yeah. I feel like the Senate seat is more important there. I don't think anybody who votes for Kanye West is going to vote for what's his name?
Cory Gardner.
Cory Gardner. All I could remember was Cory, and I kept wanting to say Booker. I just can't imagine, right, somebody who wants to vote for Kanye West wanting to vote for Gardner.
Yeah,
that guy's the lamest white dude ever.
And speaking of lamest white dude ever, and finally, Jerry Falwell evidently taking an indefinite leave of absence from Liberty University because they caught him on a boat with a zipper down.
Yeah, and the story around it seems really weird. And when he was talking about it on the radio, he sounded like he was drunk. And I don't know if you noticed, but his face looks like really swollen. And I don't know, I guess we're all sort of gaining some COVID weight in quarantine.
Sure.
But when you're on a private yacht, you know, chances are you probably got a treadmill at home, right? So, it was his wife's assistant, and he said that she was pregnant and that she couldn't get her pants buttoned. And he was like, well, I got some pants I can't get buttoned either. And took a picture of himself with a little drinky poo in his hands that he said was black water. And so the board of directors said, you know what, maybe you should get your stuff together and take a leave of absence for a little while and figure stuff out. But, you know, maybe that's because prayers really are answered. Maybe that is the good Lord just saying, you know what, America, you're having a hard time right now. I'm going to give this one to you.
Yeah, we're going to let him go. And look, you know, as the moral leader of the Christian right, I find his behavior, you know, in line.
You know, yeah, it's very much in line with the rest of the Christian right. It makes a lot of sense that he would be a complete hypocrite and a sleazeball. Because he just fits right in with that crowd.
Right in. But Sarah, I appreciate the time as always. Thanks so much. Keep up the great work there at Raw Story. You do great stuff. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Be safe.
Back at you, our good friend Sarah Burris. Make sure you check out her work over at Raw Story. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show.
Waving the flag of freedom for people, not corporations. Rick Smith.
Of this climate crisis, this is a fight against powerful interests. And leaders need to lead, follow, or get out the way. And get out the way starting with Donald Trump.
Joe Biden taps Kamala Harris as his vice presidential running mate. Trump EPA rolls back methane pollution rules to profit the oil and gas industry. Good news for the nation's birds. Plus,
you can see where the muddy water is flowing in a boom. Has been set up in an attempt to keep the material contained.
Another fossil fuel spill, this time in Pennsylvania.
All of those stories and more straight ahead from BradBlog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
The clean, what did she say? The New Deal there, I think it was she said the California Clean New Deal, whatever it is.
It's the Green New Deal, you blithering idiot, Jeanine Jenny, whatever it is, Fox News lady, this is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, Joe Biden, name's Kamala Harris, and you talk about her environmental record, I'm guessing.
Yes, exactly. You've probably heard by now that presumptive Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden selected U.S. Senator from California, Kamala Harris,
who?
To be his vice presidential running mate.
Oh.
Major environmental groups like the Sierra Club recently endorsed Biden for president, no surprise there, and now they have also praised the selection of Harris, saying it indicates a sustained Democratic focus on environmental justice. Senator Harris has earned a 91% lifetime score on the League of Conservation Voters environmental scorecard. As California State Attorney General, Harris had a record of suing polluters like ExxonMobil, and in the U.S. Senate, she co-sponsored the Green New Deal resolution.
Oh, I think you mean the Clean New Deal. I've heard of that on Fox News.
In her own campaign for president, Harris's climate policy proposals put environmental justice front and center and labeled climate solutions both a moral imperative and an economic opportunity. Just last week, Harris and Democratic Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez formally introduced the Climate Equity Act, centered on frontline communities that are disproportionately burdened by pollution and climate impacts. On Wednesday, in her first joint campaign appearance with Biden, climate was at the top of her list.
This election isn't just about defeating Donald Trump or Mike Pence. It's about building this country back better. And that's exactly what Joe and I will do. We'll create millions of jobs and fight climate change through a clean energy revolution.
Climate scientists have warned with increasing urgency that the next 10 years will seal the trajectory of global temperatures and living conditions for all life on the planet for the next century. So the November 3rd election really is an inflection point, a crossroads for the planet.
Didn't you say that 4 years ago?
Yes. But every election is now going to be that important.
I guess it is.
By the way, Biden also announced that if elected president, he would block uranium mining near the Grand Canyon in Arizona and the controversial proposed Pebble Mine in Alaska.
What about fracking? Will he end fracking?
That is still up in the air.
Uh-huh.
Meanwhile, as if to underscore the stark differences between the two major parties, the Trump Environmental Protection Agency is set to formally issue new rules to weaken key Obama-era standards restricting methane pollution from the oil and gas industry. The rollbacks include eliminating federal requirements that oil and gas companies install technology to detect and fix leaks of methane, an extremely potent greenhouse gas. However, the new rules could be reversed if Democrats win the White House and take control of the Senate.
A rollback, rollback?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll take it.
In Pennsylvania, cleanup operations are now underway from a new spill on the controversial Mariner East 2 pipeline under construction. Drilling mud flowed into a state park lake that also provides drinking water for Chester County residents. Mm. The $3 billion Mariner East pipeline has racked up more than 100 environmental violations in just 3 years for polluting wetlands and waterways.
I hope Joe Biden notices that's his home state.
But some good news. Carbon Brief reports that over the first 6 months of 2020, the size of the global coal power fleet fell for the first time ever, meaning that more coal plants were shut down than opened around the world this year.
When will Donald Trump stop his war on coal?
In a blistering ruling, a U.S. district court has struck down Trump administration rule changes that gave nearly free rein for individuals and corporations to kill migratory birds. The judge wrote that the Department of Interior's actions to undo the Migratory Bird Act were contrary to law, saying, quote, "It is not only a sin to kill a mockingbird, it is also a crime."
That ruling is for the birds. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find, follow, and share us planet-wide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, no votes in the House until September 14th. Mitch McConnell today says no votes until September 8th. But McConnell did throw in the, hey, within 24 hours, if they do get something, we'll come back. Knowing that, trust me, they're not going to come up with anything. Because as Mnuchin said to Pelosi today, they're dug in. Because, you know, like we've been saying, they believe they've got the upper hand here. They believe with these executive orders, it looks like they're accomplishing something. Pure politics at its absolute worst. And here to share some thoughts on the reality of this situation and where we are, I've asked Sarah Nelson to come talk with us. Sarah is the president of the Association of Flight Attendants, CWA. Sarah, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks, Rick. First and foremost, I just want to make sure that listeners know that this is not over. And one of the biggest problems in Washington is that the default is do nothing. So if you allow that kind of commentary to go on, then it just lets them off the hook.
Yep.
The fact of the matter is that those executive orders are completely vapid. They're nothing. It was on purpose to disrupt the negotiations. And the truth is that Congress can get this deal done. And I just want to take us back to January of 2019, when we thought that this was Trump's shutdown, the federal government shutdown, right? And the truth was that Congress could fix the issue. And Congress ultimately did fix the issue with a veto-proof vote. So let's not let these Republican senators, especially the 23 who are up for election right now and are in fear of their jobs, off the hook so easily. They do need to come back in 24 hours. McConnell hinted at that because he knows he may have to pull the trigger on that if things get rough at home.
No, absolutely.
So,
but
I don't want anybody to let him off the hook.
I let none of them off the hooks. Democrat, Republican, Independent. If it were me, nobody's going home. Nobody leaves. Nobody gets out of their office until something gets done. Because the sad reality is, and I'm hearing from people all the time, we're saying, look, I can't pay my rent. Look, my insurance just expired. Look, I'm worried about how I'm going to, you know, put food on the table. I'm worried about school clothes for the kids. I'm worried about any number of things. Because guess what? They're losing their jobs. Their income is going down. And thanks to Trump, McConnell, the whole cabal, they've now gone off the unemployment cliff. And that $600 that was the lifeline that saved our economy from collapse is now gone, and we're heading into what could be the next collapse.
Yeah. So Rick, the emperor has no clothes, and that is exactly what was going on with those executive orders. That is exactly what has been going on with this administration from the beginning. And it's been about, look at the emperor's beautiful clothes. The emperor has no clothes. Meanwhile, we're talking about the clothes until we're realizing the emperor has no clothes. And by the time that all happens, the people have gone out of town making, their big bucks without handing over any clothes.
Right.
So what we have to recognize is that we actually have the power here to change this situation. So I just want to make sure that we understand.
I've been saying all along, you vote the bums out. Come November, we throw them all out. But ultimately, right now, you should be hammering their office with phone calls and letters and every point of contact possible. Even if you haven't lost your job yet, because by pulling this kind of money out of the economy, this kind of demand out, more people are going to lose their jobs. And,
that's right.
Down the road, we know that's going to happen.
I do want to talk about solutions, though, because I think, people have to know that this isn't just, we're not just complaining here, and we're not just saying, oh, they're a do-nothing crowd. When you say they're a do-nothing crowd, you're giving them permission to do nothing.
Right.
And so I'm not willing to do that. No, you're an elected member of Congress. You're elected to serve us. You do your job. And so here's what we need you to do. And I will tell you, because we have been working specifically our payroll support program extension, I do want to talk about that in a moment, But we have been working this, and there is bipartisan, broad-based bipartisan support for a spending bill that will actually take care of the American people. And the Trump administration has simply gotten in the way of that because, guess what? When people don't have their jobs, they also don't have their union card. Now, your union's always going to stick with you, but the Trump administration knows that one of the fastest ways to get rid of unions is to put everybody on the unemployment line. One of the fastest ways to make people desperate and be willing to take anything that people are giving is to put them out of their jobs and not have them be able to take care of themselves. This can be exacerbated in a pandemic. So you everything that you would think that should be happening right now, turn it on its head with someone who wants to become a dictator. That's what's going on here. So we gotta understand that if you play in that world, you're not going to be able to have the normal pressures. But we have the pressure of the election. Yes, it's coming up in November, but you can pressure that right now to get results. So I'm going to tell you, I think we should just break this down a little bit. First and foremost, we're in this in the aviation industry because we got out and demanded in March that we actually build a package that's workers first. We put all of our experience from 9/11 into that. And so it says that the corporations can only use the money for pay and benefits. It says they cannot involuntarily furlough anyone. It says that they have to maintain service to all of the communities so that we're continuing to do what our infrastructure of aviation is supposed to do for this country, especially in the middle of a pandemic. And, oh, we cut the worst practices, too, the things everybody hates. No stock buybacks, no dividends, and caps on executive compensation. And so it has been the most successful jobs program of coronavirus relief. It enjoys tremendous support, and that's about jobs. But it's also about continuing the services. No, the rest of the bill that we're talking about here, the money for state and locals, yeah, that's for services that we count on, but it's for jobs. So EPI says without that money for state and local, we're going to lose 5.3 million jobs. That means those people now are not spending in their community. It also means that we're laying off people like in public transportation. So that as people are getting less and less paychecks and trying to get to work, maybe selling their cars, they don't have the service to get on the bus or on the train to get to work. It means that you don't have sanitation workers. So that in the middle of a pandemic, we're not cleaning up our cities. It means all of those things. If we don't fund the post office, that's 600,000 jobs. Yes, it's the last mile of our delivery infrastructure in this country. It is 100,000 veterans who have that job. It is the way that 4 million people a day get their prescription drugs. It is connected to our success in the airline industry because we carry the vast majority of the mail in our planes, which is also revenue for our airlines as well. We're all connected. But it is about 600,000 jobs, not just jobs, good union jobs with pay, health care, pensions, and a career path. And so that's what this whole bill is about. And we have to understand that we've got to demand that Congress do their job because otherwise they're going to be out of a job just like us. But in the meantime, the entire economy is going to go in the toilet and we are not going to be able to recover.
Yeah, and that, you know, you've just laid out my entire argument for the last 2 weeks. And I actually don't know where to go outside of that because it was so perfect. The reality is, you know, your PSP program has worked. Not one of your members, not one of the people have been laid off. That should have been something, the model that we were moving forward for everybody. Other countries have figured this out. I'm still, just mind boggled that we haven't demanded this. I know a lot of people are pushing for it, but as a society as a whole, we're not. And what we heard was in the messaging that's come out is, well, those people who are unemployed are just lazy. They don't want to go out and get extra jobs because they're getting the extra money in the unemployment.
Well, let's talk about this. So first of all, we all know that that's ridiculous. The vast majority of people who are out of work don't have a job to go to. But also in this environment, for every one job that's available, five people are competing for it. So this is not just about telling people, go back to work, you lazy bones. There are no jobs to be had. The jobs are not there. And what we have to do is focus on attacking the virus. What's absurd is that it took our pressure on our airlines to put in place a safety provision like requiring masks for everyone in the airports and on the airplanes. That was not government directed. That was because our airlines responded to our our request for that, and recognizing that public health was necessary to have people feel confidence in being able to travel. So that's important. But, you know, the rest of the world, you talked about these other countries and what they're doing and what they're doing to contain coronavirus. They are looking at the United States and they're saying, we can't trust the United States. My passport, my U.S. passport, your U.S. passport, it is no good today. We cannot, Americans cannot travel around this world because we have not taken the responsible steps that we would normally take. Think about how far we have come for the rest of the world to say, we can't trust America. And so our freedom has already been clipped. Our wings have already been clipped here. And if we don't take care of this, we are going to lose a lot more freedoms than all of the access that Americans enjoy. You know, can you imagine growing up here and thinking, I'm stuck? I don't even have the chance to try to work to buy that once-in-a-lifetime round-the-world ticket to go see everywhere. I don't even have that chance.
Yeah.
My kids don't have that chance. We can't connect with the rest of the world. Oh, all of a sudden, we become the pariah in trade negotiations, too, and we have no power there either. Just when we are starting to try to build up a requirement for our trade negotiations to actually work for workers, to actually work for the environment, we're going to lose all of that. We're going to lose every opportunity going forward if we don't demand right now. We can start practicing right now because the election really matters, Rick. But what also really matters is that we understand that it matters every single day what we do up to Election Day, and it matters every single day what we do after that. Because even if we elect the best case scenario, we got to stay on it to make sure that our representatives are actually reflecting the needs and wants of working people.
No, you're spot on. You know, as I said, you know, learn the lesson of 2009, where, you know, we elected a black president, and everyone broke their arms, patting themselves on the back, and everybody went home. And, you know, people are complaining they didn't get the things that they had, the hope and change that they wanted. I'm hoping this time we learn that lesson and push forward. I did want to get your thoughts on Joe Biden's choice as a running mate. Where are we on Kamala Harris?
I guess what I would say is it doesn't matter what I have to say. It matters what my mother, who is a 76-year-old choir director still at the church, formerly registered Republican, who wrote to me and said, "Oh my God, I can't believe it!" with all these exclamation marks. I'm so excited. And she's typically very pessimistic about politics. So you know what? I think that's great. I think if this is exciting people around the country and they're going to get out to the polls, that is great. And ultimately, again, I just don't think it matters who we elect on the Democratic ticket, as long as working people are getting together, building our power, organizing like never before, and actually holding our representatives accountable. So that's what I'd have to say about that.
That's an excellent answer. And, well, you know, a very good political sidestep. I give you credit for that. But, you know, ultimately, you're right. Whoever wins, and I'm hoping it's Joe Biden, we push him to do the things that we need to get done. And part of it is ensuring that in the middle of a global pandemic, we're not forcing people back into dangerous, unsafe workplaces. And we give workers the voice to if they still have jobs, to be able to protect themselves in those jobs.
You know, yes, that's exactly right, Rick. And the one thing that I would say is, you know, I got to serve on the Biden-Sanders Unity Task Force. I know the policies really well. The policies for labor are the most progressive policies that we've seen in 100 years for labor. And if those are enacted, we're in good shape. But set that aside for a minute. This is not a question of do we elect Barack Obama or do we elect John McCain? Do we elect Barack Obama or do we elect Mitch or Romney? I mean, this choice is choosing our field of battle, and it is a field of battle that is burning up around us if we don't choose Joe Biden. There is just no choice. We got to get out there and work like crazy to make sure that Joe Biden is elected, because the alternative is really giving up everything that is the foundation of freedom and the ability to form our unions and everything that we continue to press on within our Constitution to make this the more perfect union that it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
So we don't even have that chance if we don't elect Joe Biden.
Yeah, in the simplistic form, I remember, you know, back before the pandemic and back before all of this, you know, this crisis hit, someone, when Joe Biden was the, you know, obviously going to be the nominee, someone asked me, you know, what's the bumper sticker? And I said, life or death, you know, Joe Biden, yeah. 2020, it's life or death. And it's, yeah, even more magnified now. Literally, it's either life or death.
You got it.
It seems, that's it. Seems that simple. But, Sarah, I appreciate the time. I appreciate the work that you guys do. Keep it up. I hope folks will check out your most recent article over at Fortune. Another huge unemployment wave is coming, and there is an obvious way to stop it, written by Sarah Nelson. I will make sure we get that out on social media. Sarah, always great to talk with you. Come back again real soon.
Rick, do two things for me. One, tell my Sarah sisters hello. And two, I want everybody to know you got to stay with it. You got to demand of these people to get the job done. We are not going to allow them to go one more day without getting this relief package done. Don't even say it. We got to demand it.
There you go. Good stuff, Sarah. Thanks so much.
All right. Take care.
Bye. Sarah Nelson, president of the Association of Flight Attendants, CWA. Love to hear your thoughts. Email me, Rick at therickSmithShow.com. Make sure you check out Sarah's article. Right back after this. Stick around.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. Communists, Reds, long have these been the cries of the press and politicians seeking to undermine the labor movement in the United States. Sometimes even labor leaders themselves got caught up in the anti-communist hysteria. And on this day in labor history, the year was 1938. That was the day that the president of the Metal Trades Department of the American Federation of Labor, John P. Fry, gave testimony before the Special Committee on Un-American Activities. It was known as the Dies Committee. Texas Congressman Martin Dies Jr. founded the effort to root out an alleged communist threat in the U.S. In his testimony, Fry alleged that there were 300 CIO leaders who were communists. At the time, the AFL and CIO were two separate organizations. The CIO had split off from the AFL to pursue more organizing in industries like automaking and steel. Even after his testimony, Fry maintained a network of operatives in the labor movement to identify suspected communists. A few days after Fry spoke before Congress, the Chicago Tribune ran a story explaining the perceived communist labor threat. The article declared if the communists in the United States continued to operate as the Communist Party, they would have no influence on American foreign policy in the foreseeable future. But by making themselves leaders of labor and therefore powerful in democratic councils, they can be of immediate value to the Soviets. The paper warned that the communists were hoping to march the U.S. into another European war. The public had little appetite for another major conflict. The charge that the CIO was infiltrated by communists who wanted war took its toll on the radical labor organization, dividing workers by playing into the fears and hysteria of the era.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
I gotta tell you, I really like Sarah Nelson. I think she is going to be at some point the best president of the AFL-CIO, and I'm hoping that happens. I was, you know, obviously one of the first people around the country to be going, look, this is somebody who should be leading the labor movement. And look, it came out of when the government shutdown happened. She was the only person to call for a general strike. She was the only person, and she had, you know, no stake really in the game. She's not a public sector union leader, but she's like, look, the idea of solidarity, we need to be sticking together. We need to be exerting our worker power. And I give her credit for that. And you know, throughout this, the fact that she has been so effective and so, so dogged that they got that PSP put through is remarkable. Nobody else got it done. Nobody else was able to do that. And it's one of these moments where you go, you know, this payroll support program that they pushed for. They haven't had one member laid off. That's pretty remarkable. And it's something that we should have all been fighting for because, look, it is somewhat popular, even with Republicans. I remember, you know, we had Joe Walsh on the program, and Joe said, look, if you're telling people they got to stay home, you got to pay at least 90% of their salary. You got to have a program in place that says, you know, when we shut these things down, and we still need this because it isn't over, as we've talked about. You know, it's going to get ugly and fast come the fall. You know, that's always been the fear. The fear has always been that, you know, in a couple of months, this will explode. And that's when it was going to be, when everybody's pushed inside, when it gets colder and everybody's, you know, jammed inside and everybody's, you know, huddled together and it's colder and people are getting sick. And we don't have a plan in place for when that happens. They've done nothing. And look, you know, by saying that they went home and, you know, oh, well, you know, they're fighting over it and they've dug in because it's political. She's right. This is, you know, giving them a pass. And look, I've been saying, you know, call your representative, hammer on them early, hammer on them often, especially if you're unemployed at this moment. Your full-time job should be calling your representative every hour on the hour going, look, here's what I'm worried about now. The light bill just came. I can't pay it. The mortgage is due. I can't pay it. There are no jobs out there. I lost mine. And I know the frame that the Republicans have been hammering on is, well, they're just lazy and they just want to work. As she pointed out, there's one job for five applicants. I've talked to people who, you know, they've been sending out resume after resume after resume, no callbacks. Because there are 1,000 people looking for one job. We're in very dangerous times. And this is where policymakers have to step up and be actual statesmen. They have to be the people who are going to say, we can help make this better. We can save the economy by ensuring demand, by ensuring that people can afford to participate, that make sure that millions of people don't lose their homes. Yeah, I was just reading a story the other day that, you know, pointed out, look, you know, the mortgage crisis, the rent crisis, that's real. But beyond that, even if you can afford to pay the rent or continue to pay the mortgage, the water bills due, the electric bills due, you go down the list. All of the utility bills are due. And how long before they start shutting those off? Because, look, you can say there's going to be a moratorium. We're not going to let you shut off the power. We're not going to let you shut off the electricity. We're not going to let you kick people out of their homes. We're not going to do that. You can't do it yet. But in 6 months, you still owe all those back bills. You still owe all of that stuff. It doesn't go away. They just push it off. It's kind of like Trump's payroll tax idea. You're not getting anything. They're going to give you a short-term loan on your Social Security and then bribe you with the idea that, well, you won't have to pay it back without you thinking that, well, then I'm just not going to get Social Security because you're going to blow it up. You're going to destroy it. That's how simplistic they think we are. That's how stupid they think we are. And I keep coming back to, I'm a firm believer in government's ability to solve problems. I'm a firm believer in the fact that through our representative democracy, through our system of government, we can do the big things collectively that individually we can't do. That's always been my point. And I've always said that government decides who gets what. It comes down to power. It comes down to organization. It comes down to voice. Why is it that the wealthy are always taken care of? Why is it that corporate America is always taken care of first? Why is it that they are at the front of the line all the time? And the average everyday working stiff, you and me, we seem to barely get the crumbs left over. And that comes back down to how divided we are. They know they've done a great job of pitting us against one another. They know they've done an amazing job of creating division over race, over gender, over, you know, I've got a greater work ethic than you. Look, they know they can do that. They know they can dangle the welfare queen argument out there. They know they can dangle, they got the extra $600 and you didn't get it. They know they can do that because they know it's so easy to just destroy the idea of solidarity. They know that they can rip us apart. They know it. And they plan for it. And they spend millions of dollars on a media infrastructure designed to continue to do it to us. And every time we fall for it, like lambs to the slaughter, we fall for it. And this, again, is another one of those moments. The country is in chaos. Cities are literally burning because we have a system set up on continuing that division. And, you know, there are people saying, you know, we've had enough of it. And I keep saying, when is it that working people eventually go, you know, we've had enough of this. We've had enough of the crappy jobs with the loss of income and the lower standard of living and the incredibly expensive health insurance and the evaporated pension. You know, when do we say enough is enough? When do we go, you know, I've had it. We got to do something better. We can do better. When does that happen? Instead, you know, we point fingers at each other. And, you know, as my mother always said, you know, when you point your finger at somebody, you got three pointing back at you. But boy, we're quick to point that finger, that divisive finger. And yet, you know, I think Sarah was right. You know, we give the, you know, the politicians a pass. I said from the beginning, the day that Sidney Hoyer's calendar came out and they were all going home till the 14th of September, I said, this is a huge mistake. I would have never allowed it. They should be on the floor of the House doing their job. They should be screaming on the House floor every minute of every day until this gets passed. And I know, you can't make Mitch McConnell do his job. You can't make someone who wants to continue to do the bidding of the wealthy and big corporations over the rest of us. You can't force him to do his job, but you can put pressure on him. And you can put pressure on every one of those 23 Republican senators who are up for re-election. You can put pressure on the next set of Republican senators who are going to be up in 2 years, telling them, we're going to remember you. They could go over and around Mitch McConnell. They could, in fact, as Sarah pointed out, pursue a veto-proof majority to ensure that this gets done. Sad reality, they're not going to. And we know they're never going to. Because, as we talked about yesterday, they believe the Democrats are in a pickle. They believe they've got the political upper hand. And in that frame, you don't matter. I don't matter. The millions of people who have lost their jobs don't matter. The millions of families who no longer have health insurance, they don't matter. The people who haven't been able to pay their rent for the last couple of months and won't be able for the next few months, they don't matter. The people who own those properties, who aren't getting the rent money that have to pay the bank and are probably going to end up getting foreclosed on as well, they don't matter. And when you realize what Sarah said was so spot on, we're interconnected, that everything connects into everything else. If I lose my job today, chances are my neighbor could lose his job tomorrow. And the ripple effect from that is just horrible. And the fact that you have a political class who doesn't appear to be afraid of we the voters, that's a dangerous moment to be in. And as I said at the beginning of the show, we've got a president who clearly doesn't want us to vote and is clearly willing to allow the Postal Service to go under just to protect his ability to block your right to vote. That should be a problem for everybody. And I don't care what political stripe you are. It should be one of those non-starter things, one of those things that makes you angry and ready to take action. And maybe, you know, as I've been hearing from a lot of my Republican friends, for the first time, I'm voting for a Democrat because I can't take this in.